Now Jeff Blair can tell you bedtime stories. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher and listen anytime you want. Sweet dreams. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Winnipeg Free Press, Calgary Herald, Montreal Gazette, Globe and Mail. Jeff Blair has written for all four. And if you can survive the world of newspapers, you can survive anything. This is the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, it's safe to say that these next 24 hours are going to be the most excruciating of the Toronto Maple Leafs offseason. You know, more so, I would argue, than the deflating reality that Connor McDavid was being exiled to Edmonton, where instead of playoffs, he'll get a real shot in the next 3 years of leading Canada in scoring at the World Championships. I mean, you can't argue with the ping pong ball, right? But what will it say if the most sought-after coach in a decade or so decides that he wants to go to the St. Louis Blues or the San Jose Sharks or, God forbid, the Buffalo Sabres instead of Toronto? Mike Babcock is meeting today with the San Jose Sharks. He is going to talk to Detroit Red Wings GM Ken Holland as well. And tomorrow, he is expected to announce where he will be coaching in 2015-2016. Now, scuttlebutt, and I got to say, all the hockey insiders out there, they're earning their money in this because this is essentially a guy and his wife making a decision about where they want to go. Scuttlebutt is Babcock will likely take a short-term deal to stay in Detroit. And for Leafs fans, that's likely the best-case scenario absent Babcock signing in Toronto. I mean, seriously, think about this. If Mike Babcock goes elsewhere, he goes to Buffalo. I love Buffalo. But if he goes to Buffalo, that won't be a slap in the face. That's a left hook. It will mean that all of MLSE's money and all of Brendan Shanahan's good intentions weren't enough to sell this team on Babcock. It will speak volumes, I think, of what the industry thinks of this situation, and it will, quite frankly, be an indictment of Tim Lewicki and Shanahan, who've loaded up on middle management types and eroded much of the power that they could have been expected to offer Babcock as an enticement. Now, think about this. And as yet named CEO of MLSE, Brendan Shanahan, a new GM, Mark Hunter, Kyle Dubas, it's a lot of freaking cooks in the kitchen if you're Mike Babcock. So no Connor McDavid, maybe no Mike Babcock. Look, I understand that these things are not entirely in the Maple Leafs' control. Can't control ping pong balls. And can't control the whims of a much highly sought after human being. But from a distance, it's going to seem as if this rebuild, should Mike Babcock decide not to come to Toronto, it's going to seem as if this rebuild is going to be starting out with a couple of plan Bs. If Babcock goes elsewhere, and if I were him, I'd avoid this place with a 10-foot pole. Are you beginning to wonder why it is that in Toronto, we just can't have nice things too? Continue our discussion about Mike Babcock, his possible destinations, what it could mean for the Detroit Red Wings, what it could mean for the Maple Leafs. But there's another coaching story in this city that developed over the weekend. Hasn't drawn as much attention, though it's starting to draw some attention now. The Toronto Raptors have dispatched a couple of Dwayne Casey's assistants from last year. We expected this. We were told last week that Dwayne Casey was in fact coming back as head coach. Well, it hasn't really been confirmed, but sources have indicated he's coming back as head coach, but with a different staff. Bill Bynoe, Tom Stirner have been let go. Eric Smith is our Raptors play-by-play voice in Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Good morning, Mr. Smith.
Jeff, how are you?
Doing well.
You're fired up. It's your Monday.
It's a good day. It's a good day. You know, it's a fun day. There's all these coaching situations and all that. And, I mean, that's all. Honest to God, all we do in the city is talk about coaches and general managers. Seriously, man, we do. And that's what happens when teams don't win championships, I guess. What do you make of this shakeup of Dwayne Casey's staff?
I'm not overly surprised because we, as you just said, we all kind of knew something was going to happen when all the reports kind of came out in the last 7 to 10 days that Dwayne Casey was staying, but that there would still be some sort of a change. I think we assumed that that meant it was going to come down to the assistants then and how many of the assistants. I think Tom Sterner probably gets caught in a bit of a numbers crunch in that he survived the first time around when Masai Ujiri, you know, made some changes when he first came into the coaching staff and brought in some new faces and some new voices. But Tom Sterner was the one that stuck around, and he actually, you know, shifted his duties and responsibilities over the last couple of seasons with Toronto, where, you know, depending on the season, he was either, you know, the defensive guy or the offensive guy. And clearly he became the fan favorite as far as the halftime interviews on television and a lot of even the radio interviews he did as well. But I think he was mere just a casualty of kind of the numbers game and of maybe thinking, you know, time for fresh blood. I don't think it's necessarily a knock on the job he did or didn't do. I think it might merely be a case of we've run the course here and let's try for a new face, new voice in that role. And Bill Bano's an interesting one as well, because you remember he came in as the lead assistant replacement for Johnny Davis when Johnny Davis was let go, a good close friend of Dwayne Casey's, when Masai first came. And Bano did a lot of work, especially with Valanciunas. I know people have read all about that over the last 12 hours or so as well, but he put in a lot of work with the big man. And it's not like he was just solely with the big man. But I think, you know, given his tenure in coaching, not only in the college ranks, but as an assistant in the pros and other stops as well, I have no doubt that he'll find work again right away. And again, I don't think this was a knock on anything he did or didn't do. It might be more a case of a mutual interest of, you know what, we maybe want a new face, new voice. We need to make some changes. Bill, are you happy here? Do you want to maybe explore other opportunities? Are there other opportunities that you could foresee yourself either going back to or joining? And I think it kind of maybe was a mutual type thing where there was interest on both sides to perhaps look in a different direction.
Eric, in most cases when a coaching staff is put together, it's, you know, you've got the manager, at least in baseball, you've got the manager's guy, or in basketball, the head coach's guy, or maybe guys. You've got the organizational guy. You've got the GM's guy. I mean, putting together a staff, and you know, unless you're somebody, I don't even know. I was going to say if you're somebody like Greg Popovich, you know, who can sort of call his own shot. Staffs are always kind of a little, you get a little bit, I get a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The organization gets a little bit. Who are Dwayne Casey's guys? Do we know who his quote-unquote guys are in the staff?
I want to be clear when I say this, that I don't think that, I don't think he dislikes any of them or mm-hmm. doesn't get mm-hmm. along with any of them by any means.
No, not at all. But I mean, look, when you're together with, and that's a good point. I'm not saying that, well, boy, there's a split in the coaching ranks.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, I mean, you've got a guy. We've all got guys. Most of us have guys. I've got Travis, you know. I mean, most of us have guys.
I think, though, my
sorry,
point
Travis.
Is I'm maybe walking a bit of a fine line here, or splitting hairs a little bit.
Okay.
I think his guy was Johnny Davis. I think they were very close amongst coaching ranks, let alone even away from the floor. And that's not to say, again, that he doesn't and hasn't formed a bond, a friendship, a relationship with Nick Nurse, with
sure.
Jesse Mirmus, with David Gale or Jama Malalela or any of the other guys that are still remaining, Jamal McGlure. But I don't know that I would necessarily say that those are Casey's guys.
Okay.
And I don't know even that Bano or Sterner were. Again, they got along professionally. They got along personally. I'm sure they spent some personal moments together, but I think it was more a professional relationship where there wasn't necessarily a rich history of working together with any one of those guys, but they came together and formed two pretty solid seasons, you know, depending on who was around for the both of the seasons. But then, of course, this last season, albeit bowing out, you know, in four games in a very disappointing fashion, it was still a, you know, franchise best season. So I think they came together as a unit. But I honestly, to truly answer your question, I don't know if he has a guy on his staff. And that's going to be interesting now going forward, where you would assume replacing at least two coaches, I would assume, if not more. Does Casey have that opportunity to bring in his guy, mm-hmm. or is it Masai Ujiri looking to say, no, this is what I think we need for the staff to complement you as a coach, to complement the roster that we have or the roster that I envision, and I'm the one that is ultimately naming the assistants. I can't imagine that Casey doesn't have a say, doesn't have a role, that he's not going to be sitting down in those interviews, but how much pull or say does he ultimately have? That, to me, is going to be interesting, because I think the one thing that's maybe been missing, and again, not a knock on any of these guys. I've gotten to know them. You have as well, Jeff.
Yeah.
All these guys. They've been gracious with their time in terms of whether it be doing interviews or you know, talking off the record about coaching philosophies or, you know, just being around them. And I'll admit, traveling with them over the course of the year, getting to know them on a personal level, they're all good people. But I think the one thing that maybe is missing from the staff is you don't have that old hat, that old head that on the staff necessarily. I mean, the oldest, and I mean this respectfully, is the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if you have that wily veteran, perhaps that former head coach that's sitting there on the staff, that sounding board for Dwayne Casey, and perhaps that's something that Toronto could look at going forward. And I think the other thing that's missing to some extent is the former player role. I know Jamal McGlure fills that to some extent in his multifaceted, multi-headed role of community ambassador, community relations guy, assistant coach, workout coach. He kind of wears a whole bunch of different hats. But either if he is elevated within the staff or they add another former player to the staff alongside McGlure, alongside Mermis and Nurse and whomever else is still standing as an assistant when the season starts, I think those would be the two slots perhaps that you look at, former player and a former head coach and or a wise old voice that could be that sounding board for Dwayne Casey.
In conversation with Eric Smith and the Jeff Blair Show, the problem, of course, Eric, is, and I agree with you, I think that's probably the way you go about doing it, but when you bring that wise old head, maybe less the wise old head, when you bring that former head coach in, you know what we're going to be thinking. That's the guy who replaces Dwayne Casey.
Yeah.
If Dwayne Casey's fired. And it's really, there's no way around that, is there? I mean, that's the biggest name of the group of assistants that's hired is probably going to be the guy that we're going to look at as Dwayne Casey's replacement, just by human nature.
Well, I think there's already some people that believe or have believed for a while that was Nick Nurse that guy when he first came.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still considered one of the good young minds in the game and a former head coach in the D-League and a guy that a lot of people around basketball circles around the NBA believe could or should one day be a head coach. So maybe that guy is already on your staff. Hypothetically speaking, if Casey were to be replaced mid-season right now, I mean, if we were just to kind of get out the crystal ball and just say, this is the staff, there are no other changes, I know that's not going to be the case. But
right.
Who would take over? Well, Nick Nurse, automatically, especially now with Bill Baino gone, Nick Nurse would be at the top of that list. But I'll say this. Think about two of the teams that are remaining right now of the Final Four in the NBA are being coached by rookie head coaches, at least from an NBA perspective.
True.
Steve Kerr in Golden State and then David Blatt as well in Cleveland. And you look at the staff that they have. Steve Kerr, now granted, I know he got a ton of money, so he's got a fantastic safety net to fall back on, let alone the safety net of knowing he can just simply jump right back into his broadcasting career if he wants to. But he goes out and has the best record in the league. But who's on his staff? Former head coach, and a very recent former head coach as well, and a longtime head coach and veteran coach in Alvin Gentry. But also on his staff is a former player in Luke Walton, a former player in Jaren Collins. You look in Cleveland as well. With Blatt in his first season, and clearly he went through a bunch of ups and downs with his first year and trying to learn the NBA game and learning to coach alongside LeBron James and all. But when you look at his staff as well, you've got a former player in Tyronn Lue, and you got a former player in James Posey, but you've also got a former head coach and a very recent former head coach who was replaced in Milwaukee by Jason Kidd in Larry Drew. Look in Minnesota. Even on if we go from the top end of the scale, Jeff, in terms of two of the top teams in the league, Cleveland and Golden State, to the bottom in Minnesota. You know, Flip Saunders, as coach and GM, has got two former head coaches sitting on his staff in Sam Mitchell and Sidney Lowe.
Right.
So I think that as much as you're right that that's the guy we might look at as saying that could be Casey's replacement and is now Dwayne Casey looking over his shoulder, I think there also has to be a confidence in your skill set as a coach and saying, no, I'm the coach, and as long as I've got the contract and as long as I'm performing and as long as I'm winning, I'm going to be the head coach, and I don't care if somebody else has got experience or is a former head coach or if that's the guy that people are thinking is my replacement, we're going to work as a team, and as long as we keep winning, I'm going to be this head coach, and I don't have to worry about looking over my shoulder because I've got the confidence that I'm the guy. And I think if it makes you better, then I think it makes the team better and it makes the situation better. I don't think you can worry about stuff like that.
Hey, Eric, very quickly, what do you make of the Monty Williams reports. I mean, we've heard obviously the Raptors are interested in him. Also, mm-hmm. there's some indication that Orlando may be. Where do you think that goes? What have you been hearing?
All I've heard is, and I talked to somebody yesterday, that there's definitely interest, but it's a matter of, is the interest, the feeling mutual in terms
right.
of Williams wanting to come here? He's got I believe he's got five children. So you're talking about, you know, a major uprooting of the family to bring their wife and the five kids north of the border, that type of thing. But also, is he going to maybe kick the tires on potential other head coaching gigs that open up? I mean, you led a New Orleans Pelicans team that went major chunks of the year without Anthony Davis and had injury problems all over the place and still got them into the playoffs and battled, you know, hard in that first round against the Warriors. I think what he did with that team has earned him another head coaching gig. If I were in Monty Williams' shoes, Jeff, I'd be holding out for a head coaching spot, and I wouldn't be agreeing to be anybody's assistant until later in the summer when I know that I've exhausted any and all head coaching opportunities. But there are a lot of different other guys out there. Like, you think of Mike Malone and the connections that he has to Canadian roots through mm-hmm. his dad, Brendan Malone, a former Raptors assistant, but also with the Canadian national team. Would Mike Malone be a guy that's looking to jump on as an assistant on a staff again? You know, you think about other coaches that have been let go in recent memory, with Brian Shaw as a former player, with Jacques Vaughn. There's a lot of names out there, and none of them have been, you know, attached to or attributed to Toronto yet at this point. But I'm just kind of giving some names of guys that might be available, that might be looking for work, that perhaps aren't as readily attainable, perhaps, in terms of head coaching opportunities like perhaps Monty Williams is.
Stuff as always, Eric. Take care.
Okay, thanks, Jeff.
It's Eric Smith, our Raptors play-by-play voice on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. All right, shifting focus back to Mike Babcock, and I made the point in my little preamble, my little commentary in the 10 o'clock hour that I thought the next 24 hours, 24, 48 hours, probably going to be the most excruciating of the offseason for Leafs fans. Mike Zeisberger is the hockey columnist at the Toronto Sun. Mike Zeisberger joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. Mike, am I correct in saying that you know, as much as there was a lot of anticipation about the draft lottery, I think, but I also think most people were kind of aware that, you know, you can't control a ping pong ball, but this is different, isn't it? If Mike Babcock decides to go elsewhere, it's going to seem like, I mean, you know what people in this city are going to be saying? They're going to be throwing their hands up and going, well, there you go.
You know what, Jeff? I don't think it's going to be that reaction, because I think there's been enough signs in the last 2 or 3 weeks, and maybe even before that, that Toronto really isn't on the top of his list. And I really think that unless he has a change of heart, or unless Brendan Shanahan has done an incredible selling job, which I'm not going to preclude that would happen, but I think that the mindset of people here is that he's probably going to stay in Detroit or go to one of the other places that maybe can feed his hunger a little better in terms of being able to win sooner. I think the biggest knee to the gut would be if he goes to Buffalo, because obviously it's so close. They are in a rebuild as well. And I think if he did go to Buffalo, that would be a sign that even in a rebuild, that the Sabres, and you could argue the case that it's correct, that they are a lot closer to winning even as part of a rebuild than the Maple Leafs are.
Yeah, I guess the way I approach this, Mike, is this would seem to be, if you think that the Toronto Maple Leafs, I'm not you personally, but if people think the Toronto Maple Leafs are the be all and end all, and that we've heard people say, what would be the greatest thing you could do in hockey? Well, it would be to be the guy who leads the Leafs to the promised land, the guy who leads the Leafs to the Stanley Cup. It's like the NBA. The guy who wins the next title with the New York Knicks is going to be...
The guy that wins the Stanley Cup will have schools named after him.
Exactly. Schools and streets. Maybe an arena. Maybe an arena for all...
And by the way, the last I saw, there hasn't been a Berkey Elementary built in the GTA lately.
Not yet. Okay. Not yet.
Check him in to see.
But... You know, I kind of see that point of view. People are going to, I think you're right in that. The rumor mill has kind of gradually pulled Mike Babcock more and more away from the Leafs. But at some point, shouldn't we look at this, Mike, and go, Why the hell wouldn't you want to come here? Like, isn't this the perfect place for Mike Babcock to do what he needs to do?
You know what? I don't know, because he wants to be the highest paid coach, yes, but he also wants to win. And this is going to be a process. So I think a lot of it will have to do with, okay, how quickly is this rebuild going to happen, and how quickly am I going to win? I mean, I'm not sure, and I understand what you're saying, Jeff, but I'm not sure he has the patience to want to wait 5 or 6 years to see this thing come to fruition. And, you know, I mean, if he does go to Buffalo, and it's understandable if Leaf fans are bitter because of that, but when you consider that, you know, they got young Reinhardt in the draft last year, they're going to get Jack Eichel, even though he's yet to play a game for the Sabres. They do have Evander Kane there. So you look at that and say, you know what, there is a good young nucleus here. And, hey, listen, Terry Pegula managed to make the Buffalo Bills relevant on a national scale again, which, you know, nobody ever thought that would be possible for a long time. So he's a pretty good recruiter, so to speak, and we'll see what happens with Brandon Shanahan. I mean, personally, Jeff, we all have, when we looked at the landscape at the end of the season, we all had kind of our favorites and stuff like that. Had I been the Leafs, I would have done what Edmonton did and go after Peter Chiarelli hard before he really had a chance to survey the market. I know there was a discussion there, but as far as the GM's role, I think that this is a guy that I believe only missed the playoffs once in how many years and got let go. So you have to think that with some of these guys coming off the, you know, we'll see what happens with Babcock. Obviously, Todd McClellan looks like a lock for Edmonton right now, pending the official announcement. You know, it'll be interesting to see what the Leafs' plan B is if the big B in terms of Babcock doesn't end up here.
Do you think, like, I looked at this thing at the start, Mike, and my thought process was, if I'm Mike Babcock, the two teams that I'm zeroing in on are staying in Detroit or going to Philadelphia, but for a variety of reasons. I think there's a lot of similarities in some ways between the Flyers and the Red Wings in terms of an engaged, older ownership, an ownership that wants to win. The Flyers went off the board a little bit, although everything, and I admit I'm kind of partial to UND because I know some people there, but everything I'm hearing is that they got a terrific coach in Dave Haxtell from the University of North Dakota. They went off the board a bit to get him. But where do you think he goes? Like, if it's your gut, to me it's almost, I almost see him taking another, maybe a 2-year contract with Detroit, don't you?
Yeah, no, I and you know what? Read between the lines, you know, from his recent interviews and things like that. And there's always in there sprinkled little hints about possibly staying in Detroit. And he may not come out and say that, but there's quotes about how comfortable he is there, about some of the younger players there are there. And to tell you the truth, Jeff, you know, and maybe I was a little bit off the board too, but I thought the perfect fit had that team decided, you know what, we're going to make an all-out pitch for him. The best fit I thought for him would be Pittsburgh, because there is a strong nucleus of players there. They haven't had found that kind of special key to get them, you know, to that next step since they won the cup in 2009. And how long do you think it would take Mike Babcock to, wonder if that's the place for him when he looks and sees on the roster the guy he won 2 Olympic gold medals with, Sidney Crosby, at the top of the roster list?
Right.
So that was kind of my thinking outside the box type of thing where he might end up, but obviously Pittsburgh has decided to stay put. And I really do think, Jeff, that maybe there wasn't the interest league-wide in this guy that we thought there was.
Yeah, well, I mean, that it seems to be, you know, I mean, there are people out there, Mike, who are saying that, well, you know, there are teams that don't want to be left at the altar, so they're kind of taking, you know, they're I mean, Todd McClellan's going to Edmonton, as you said. We know that Dave, that Hakstol has gone to Philadelphia. These are teams that don't want to be sort of left there. But, you know, so I don't think that's necessarily how teams work. I mean, if teams think that they have a legitimate shot at Mike Babcock and that he's their guy, they're going to wait for it. I mean, no, you know, I just think that's the way it is. I think for a variety of reasons, these two other organizations have gone in a different direction. Quite frankly, they're both defensible. But where do you see the Leafs turning here? I mean, we've heard of Sheldon Keith. Do you think that it's entirely possible that we may see the Leafs go in a different direction and bring a guy in from the junior ranks?
You know, it wouldn't surprise me if they brought in Sheldon Keith. There's a couple guys from the London Knights front office that they've talking about too, who Mark Hunter would know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not sure if Sheldon Keith, if you're looking at him as more of an assistant rather than a head coach, but who knows? I mean, you know, they may tear up the template and say, we really are going to start
right
from ground zero. You know, Peter DeBoer's name has come up. You know, Grand Rapids, Blass Hill's name has come up. So, you know, there's a number of ways they could go. It depends if they want to go to the experience or, like I said, start freshly. But the other thing is, Jeff, what about a general manager? And if you don't get Babcock, then is it your priority to bring in a general manager who can then have a say into the coach? Because, you know, even if they do get Babcock, it's kind of a weird dynamic again, because you have your coach in place before you have your general manager. But then again, we know Babcock probably would like a lot of say in personnel decisions. So if you're going to get him, I can understand hiring the coach first. But otherwise, doesn't that seem a little dysfunctional to you?
Oh yeah, I mean, I felt
that. But then again, we can go back to last year and talk about that.
Sure,
too, right?
You know, and look, I don't know. I'm not in a position to judge how good Mark Hunter or Kyle Dubas are. I mean, everybody said, the people you talk to say that they're very competent and speak highly of them, so that's fine. But you know, from a distance, that was my concern with all this, is that there's too many layers there. If you're going to bring in a guy like Mike Babcock, I think the last thing you do is sort of go to him and say, oh yeah, Mike, by the way, this guy, they're also going to be involved in the decision-making. And oh yeah, I forgot to tell you, my boss, I don't know who that is yet, because yeah, Tim Lewicki's leaving town. So if you're Mike Babcock, you're looking at this and you're going, really? I got like five voices that I've never worked with before, or four of them at least I've never worked with before, telling me, or at least having an input in what I need to do. And then beyond that, some president's going to come in or some CEO's going to come in and oversee everything. If I'm Mike Babcock, I'm going, I don't need this right now. I don't need that uncertainty.
No. Then again, you have to think, though, if Shanny's going there, obviously they were one of the first teams, if not the first, to meet with Babcock. I think they once again, they just put like a blank piece of paper in front of them and say, okay, what duties do you want?
Mm-hmm.
You know, who do you want to hire around you? In the case of Dubas and Hunter, I will say this. I mean, having covered a little bit of junior hockey, mostly following Connor McDavid through the last month or so, scouts and NHL personnel people, almost to a man, say the hiring of Mark Hunter was arguably the best hire the Leafs have done in years. I'm not sure from what I hear that Mark Hunter wants to do. He's more of a player evaluation guy, and to be a GM right now, there's a lot of bureaucratic stuff that you have to go through. I'm not sure that's, you know, he's blown away by the prospects of that. But in terms of identifying personnel and talent, guys around the league say that there's no one better than Mark Hunter. We'll see, because he's at the NHL level now. So I think there is a way that this can work with the guy that they bring in. But you know, you just wonder the longer the clock ticks, the hourglass is running out. Because for me, you at least want your general manager in place by the time the draft comes around. Because if you're going to make trades, and we've talked a lot about this on the show before, there wasn't a lot of trades at the NHL trade deadline, at least not involving big-name guys. I really think there will be at the draft because of the salary cap. There's teams like, you look at, for example, the Chicago Blackhawks, who are right against the cap. The Pittsburgh Penguins, who had to play with five defensemen near the end of the year because of cap, they were pushed up against the cap. A lot of teams are going to have to dump big-name players. And if the Leafs are going to move Kessel and or Fanouf at the draft, don't you want your general manager in place by that time to do that?
You'd think so. You'd think you'd almost need it. Mr. Zeisberger, as always, great talking to you.
All right, buddy. I hope you had a good Victoria Day weekend, and we'll talk soon. Take care.
Absolutely. That's Mike Zeisberger, the Toronto Sun. We'll just have to wait and see. We know that according to various reports that Mike Babcock is in San Jose today. He's expected to talk to Ken Holland, the general manager of the Detroit Red Wings, and most indications are that we'll have an answer one way or another tomorrow. Now, I don't know if that's where Mike Babcock is necessarily going to go, or whether or not the answer will simply be that whether or not he is or isn't returning to the Detroit Red Wings. All indications are, and I think Mike's right, all indications have been in the past week that the Leafs have been less and less of a factor. Although certainly you might argue that maybe silence is a reflection of seriousness. This much we do know. The Edmonton Oilers are going to name Todd McLellan as their head coach, and that news conference will be held at 4 p.m. today, 4 p.m. Eastern. You can catch it on Sportsnet West and Pacific and Sportsnet 1. Again, the Oilers' Todd McLellan presser goes at 4 p.m. today Eastern on Sportsnet West and Pacific and Sportsnet 1. Eddie Olchuk of the NHL on NBC is one of our regular insiders. He's going to join us. We're going to recap last night's 6-2 Lightning win over the Rangers. Take a look ahead to Game 2 of the Duck Blackhawks game. And you know what? I bet Eddie Olchuk's got some thoughts in the Preakness as well. Eddie Olchuk joins us when the Jeff Blair Show continues right up to Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now more of the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, Baseball Central is just around the corner at 11 o'clock. Kevin Barker will join me. Alex Anthopoulos, the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays, he'll join us at 11:15. Got a few questions for Alex Anthopoulos. But without further ado, here's one of our regular NHL insiders, Eddie Olchuk of the NHL on NBC, joining us on the Jeff Blair Show. Eddie, good morning. Good to have you aboard. And before we talk about that other sport, I got to ask you, American Pharoah, are we going to see a Triple Crown winner here?
Jeff, always great to be with you, pal, and thanks for having me. It's been so long since we've had one. So, the odds, and liking to play the ponies myself, the odds are certainly against him because you're going to have, it looks like right now, 8 or 9 fresh horses, and to go a mile and a half in the third race in 5 weeks, it's well documented. But if the track comes off, mm-hmm. off like it was in that torrential downpour on Saturday at the Preakness, this horse relishes in the off going, and certainly looks like he is bred to run a long distance. So I think it'd be great for the game. I think it would be just a tremendous story, but it's such a difficult task. So once we get closer, we'll see the competition. But it's an awful lot to ask of these horses, and that's why it hasn't happened in 37, 38 years.
You like this horse?
I do. I've been impressed. I was really impressed with the way that he won on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
In the Preakness. I thought the Derby it was more of a, you know, I thought it was more of a merry-go-round type of race. I mean, there wasn't a lot of speed in the race. It was pretty controlling, and they just kind of went around the track. And, you know, Victor Espinosa was all into American Pharoah, the jockey. And, you know, he win by a, you know, comfortable length and a half. But I was really impressed with the way he win in the mud and in the slop. And, you know, he certainly seemed to excel in that. So, you know, it'll be real exciting to see if he can get it accomplished. And it's great for the game. Everybody will be tuning in, and hopefully we can have some real positive news. But whether or not he's going to get my money, that's a whole new different another story.
Well, let me ask you this. The Chicago Blackhawks going to get your money?
Yeah. Well, it's a huge game tonight. Like, I think that when you watched that game the other day, Jeff, is that, you know, you saw missed opportunities in that game. I mean, I thought they were the better team for a good portion of it. Then Anaheim found their game, played with the lead, and then I thought they, you know, they did some really good things. I mean, Anderson made that huge save on Patrick Kane, the one with the paddle, and, you know, hey, those are opportunities you've got to take advantage of, and they weren't able to do that. And the one thing with Anaheim is that they're a heavy team. And when you look at this matchup, Jeff, I think we talked about Anaheim early in the year. And I thought Bob Murray, and I said this to you, that I don't think there was a manager this past offseason that did a better job than Bob Murray. When you can go out and get a guy like Ryan Kesler, the best available free agent or via trade, which is the way that he got him from Vancouver, to get, you know, to become that number two center iceman behind Ryan Getzlaf. I mean, that's a hell of a 1-2 punch with those guys. And then he addressed the size issue, not only with Kesler, but he went out and got Clayton Stoner. He went out and got Nate Thompson, two big, heavy bodies. And I think it was a direct shot at the LA Kings competing against them. And you think about it, I don't think there was a team or a coach that had more pressure on him coming into this year in this playoff than Bruce Boudreau, because of how they lost last year, Jeff, to L.A., L.A. winning their second cup in 3 years, and with all the money that is being spent in Anaheim when you talk about the moves by the manager. So in saying that, neither one of these teams has faced a team like the other so far in the playoffs, right? Anaheim, they took on Winnipeg and Calgary. Winnipeg, a big, heavy team, not a lot of scoring, but really a hard team to play against. Calgary, young, some dynamic young players, but they played a hard game, still very young and inexperienced. Now they take on the Blackhawks, who are the most decorated team, two cups, stars up and down the lineup. They've been there and done that, and they really play a skilled game. The Ducks have not seen that. Now, the skate's on the other foot now with the Blackhawks. They played Nashville and Minnesota. On a scale of 1 to 10, those two series, as far as physicality, were probably averaged out to maybe be a 3 max, and that's probably being generous. Mm-hmm. The Hawks did not see any heavy hitting, hard hockey in the first two rounds. That's a way different animal here. And as I mentioned, you got the 1-2 punch with Kessler and Getzlaf, and I didn't even mention Corey Perry yet. So, I mean, neither one of these teams has seen the test that they're having right now. And for the Blackhawks, they need to find a way to finish off some of their offensive opportunities, because you've got a team in Anaheim that can certainly do that and make you pay. And one last thing, Jeff, the Blackhawks only played 4.2 defensemen in that game one. Mm-hmm. Losing Michael Roosevelt is a huge loss. Now you're asking the big four in Keith and Seabrook, Oduya and Jalmerson, to log those extra minutes. And in a hard physical series, at some point you think it's going to take its toll on those big four on the back end.
Right. I mean, there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of extra hits. There's a lot of
extra hits. Yeah, no,
when you add those moments or those minutes.
Plays, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way that they play. And when you can look at most players in this league, I mean, they're so well conditioned, is that when it becomes a skating, non-physical flag football type of series or game, I mean, it's, guys are going to be able to play that way. But all of a sudden, when you take on a team like Anaheim or Calgary or Winnipeg, I mean, you know, you wanted Washington. I mean, look at the series Washington and the Islanders played, Jeff. I mean, they had 7 games. It was 700 hits combined the two teams. That certainly had an effect on the Capitals in that Rangers series, you know. And then look at, you play who's on your schedule. You play what the matchup is, but it's something to take a look at. When it's even bigger than inside the numbers because of the style of play and how taxing it is on these guys when you get into a physical series.
Just have a couple of minutes left here, but the New York Tampa series,
yeah.
What New York played 15 games in a row that were decided by one goal, going back to last year, game 4 of the final. That ended last night. That was such a departure for the Rangers. Do you think... I'll ask you this. What do you think? Who do you think was more shocked last night when they sat in the dressing room? The Lightning, the 6-2 win, or the Rangers for the first time didn't play a one goal game for the first time.
I would say the Rangers, because look, I mean, Tampa's an explosive team. I mean, they are. They have been. They're able to put pucks up on the board. They didn't play great in game one. I thought their defense really played a much better game last night, Jeff, than they did in game one, and that certainly helped them. The game's 3-2. The Lightning are on a power play. Nash gets the chance, big save by Bishop, and then Jesper Foss has an unbelievable chance, and, you know, Bishop sticks out the left pad, and it's 3-2. And then 20 seconds later, I think it was the Killorn goal, he beats Lundqvist, and it's a 4-2 game. So, I mean, the game was, you know, it was still there. I mean, I thought Tampa was the better team. I thought, you know, even with all the chance, like, I thought, looking back on it this morning, Jeff, I thought that the Rangers might have had the better chances in the game overall, but, you know, the Lightning took advantage, right? I mean, Johnson gets the 3-on-5 goal, right? I mean, St. Louis blows a tire and he scores. And, you know, I mean, I think the more team that sat in our locker room and said, you know, I think would be the Rangers, because I think Tampa has that ability to be able to be, you know, literally a quick strike team and to put 4 or 5 up on the board, and they got 6 last night.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, I've got to think, too, that they'll sit down and say, how did we get out of that? How did we get out of those run of penalties in the first period without being buried?
Well, I mean, great point. And a lot of those are, those are avoidable penalties.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Broussard was in the middle, I think, of 3 penalties last night, all high sticking. I think he took 2 and he got 1 in the face. So, I mean, those type, and, you know, I mean, look, I just, sometimes it goes like that, but I thought the officials, for the most part, did a pretty good job. I thought they kind of missed the call there, you know, on a trip on Dominic Moore where they put the whistle in their pocket. But, you know, I think it was a big part of the game, and you're right. I mean, if you take advantage of that, if you're the Rangers, two parts change that game. The 5-on-3 for sure, the goal by Johnson, and then the save by Bishop on Foss, and then the goal by Killorn in the third period.
Good stuff as always, Eddie. We'll let you run. Safe travels, my friend.
Okay, Jeff, thanks.
It's Eddie Olchuk of the NHL and NBC going back and forth between series and also doing a little yeoman work on the horses as well. And again, the Belmont is on June 6th with American Pharoah going for the Triple Crown. And I have to admit, that's when I watch horse racing. So I'll watch that. If I know horses are going for the Triple Crown, I'll watch it. That's it for the Blair Show. We'll be back again from 9 to 11 tomorrow, but I'm not going anywhere, and you shouldn't either. Kevin Barker is going to join me. Time for Baseball Central and Alex Anthopoulos, Vice President and General Manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. There's a story out there a lot of people are talking about this morning, and let's see what Alex Anthopoulos has to say about it. Baseball Central's next, right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.